You're listening to the Truth in Boots podcast. Join me as we search the Bible for truth about our God, for hope to encourage us through hard trials and struggles, and for answers for anyone who questions our faith. The truth of God's word is not fragile, impractical, and only used on special occasions like a pair of stiletto heels. God's word, like a pair of sturdy boots, is meant to be put to work daily and is designed to protect us and help us through the mud, streams, and rocks of life. Hey guys, and welcome back to the Truth in Boots podcast. Today we are having a different kind of topic on the podcast. I have my friend Kelsey Bednarz here. She is a nutritionist, and she's gonna help us understand food and meal planning and all those questions that we have rattling around in our brain that we have all sorts of different people giving opinions on. But Kelsey is going to give us the recently graduated from nutrition school version of the answers to these questions. So welcome, Kelsey.
Thank you. I hope I can live up to that standard.
Hey, whatever you give us is probably more than we know already. Before we get into the questions that we came up together with, I just wanted to address the elephant in the room of, yes, the Bible tells us that our bodies are the temples of the living God, and the application we typically hear from that is that we should be taking care of them. So we all know that we should be eating healthy so we can have the energy we need, so that we can take care of our bodies as good stewards. But it's the execution that we are frequently fuzzy on. So I'm not going to go too into depth with the spiritual aspects. We're just going to jump right into the application. Kelsey, when we were talking after church one day, I asked you, what is the deal with the change in the food pyramid? Because you and I, and probably everyone listening, grew up with the actual pyramid. And then sometime, I think in the last decade, it changed. And the guidance on how much portion size you should be eating of different stuff changed. So what was it exactly that caused that change? And what does the new stuff look like?
Yeah. We all grew up with that pyramid, and so they changed it to the plate. I'm sure you all have seen that, or if not, then now you know it's a plate now instead of a pyramid. The reason they changed it, I think, is because it looked like the bottom was all grains, and it looked like you should be eating a whole lot of grains. And then it would go up the steps and all that, and one of the top tiers was dairy, and then the very top tier was the fats and the sweets. Well, that made it look like you should have fats and sweets at the top, and you should have a whole lot of these grains at the bottom. And I think one of the confusing things is that the carb recommendations haven't changed over the years. It's still recommended that you should have 45 to 65% of your calories coming from carbs. Now when I say carbs, though, I mean one of the three macronutrients. So there's carbs, there's fat, and there's protein. So 45 to 65% of your calories should come from carbs, but that's not saying that 45 to 65% should come from grains. That's very different. And I think the food pyramid looked like most of your food should be these grains, and I think it was just misleading. So the plate now has a little less than a quarter of the portion of the plate is grains, and that's a more accurate representation of what you should be eating in a typical meal. Now, carbs are in all of the five food groups. So the five food groups are grains, fruits, vegetables, dairy, and protein. There's carbs in all of them. So I think the confusing thing is saying grains or saying carbs and meaning grains. So the difference there is just the carb recommendation has stayed the same. the grains have looked different on the plate than the pyramid. And I think some of the other components look different on the plate as well. It paints a more realistic picture to see it on a plate than have a pyramid.
Okay.
When you can only have certain size tiers on the pyramid, you can't control exactly what it should be.
Because I do remember thinking as a kid, oh, I'm supposed to have 6 to 11 servings. Yeah, I guess 6 to 11 servings per day.
That's what it said, yes.
And then you load up on all the bread. Which leads me into the next point, the next question that we came up with. What about the fad diets? Because there's the low-carb diet, there's the Atkin diet, there's keto eating, there's all sorts of things out there. Do they work? Are they good for you?
That is a good question. And instead of going into all of them individually, we'll just talk about them as a whole. So my question then for anybody that's asking this would be, can you do this forever, for the rest of your whole life? If the answer is no, then if this type of diet is effective for, say, weight loss, then it's not going to be effective for the rest of your life, and that's what you need. If certain diets, like the keto, for example, have been proven to show some weight loss, however, it's not realistic to eat the rest of your life, and it's not necessarily good for other parts of your health. So if you happen to have high cholesterol in your family, then that's probably not a wise diet to be on. As far as all the diets combined, the issue with them is that it's cutting out some food or food group as a whole, and it's cutting out the entire thing, and it's putting you at risk of, one, being afraid of food, and two, having some deficiencies. So cutting out all grains, there are so many vitamins and minerals in grains, but cutting those out because it's one of the diets is dangerous. So then you also have the
Gonna jump in here and ask a question that popped into my head. Is there any validity in the thought that you can supplement the minerals and vitamins by taking a pill of some kind if you cut all that out?
Well, that certainly, if you're deficient, can help, but your body uses the vitamins and minerals from food way better than from a pill. In fact, they're not even sure how much you will get from a pill, from a capsule or a hard pill. They just don't even know. It can help if you take a whole boatload of a high dose of a vitamin or mineral, but then it would be so much better for your body to get it from the food itself, and it uses it so much more effectively, and it's in the right form that it's intended to be in, and you can just use it so well. So also with the fad diets, if you can't maintain it forever, then you're just gonna go back to that weight back and going back to that regular eating. And that's called weight yo-yoing, which is very dangerous for your metabolism, it's dangerous for your heart health, and all sorts of other organs of your body. So you really want to maintain a weight, but not go back and forth and back and forth. And that's even more dangerous than the initial weight. A lot of people think that it's more dangerous than the initial weight itself. So it's really important that you can maintain it, and that it's something that you can do forever.
So when you think of healthy eating, probably the first thing that pops into my mind definitely is, oh no, I'm going to go start trying to eat healthy this month. So that means absolutely no desserts. And if you're a coffee drinker, that means dropping your coffee and all the creamer that comes with it. Is that what healthy eating looks like?
No, not necessarily, because if you do that, you're not going to be able to maintain that forever. And you're going to want that even more. And the next time you have it is probably going to be way too much. Is that not right? I mean,
yep.
If I go without a dessert for a long time, then I am going to eat that dessert when I get it. And one of my mentors when I was in my internship to be a dietitian was, she has a lot more experience with this than I do with weight loss counseling, but her rule of thumb was if you have 3 indulgences a week that will not impede or you from achieving your weight loss goals. So she said an indulgence might be a sweet, it might be a fried food, or it could be a sugary beverage, like your fancy coffees. So if you allow yourself these 3 indulgences a week, then you'll, 1, enjoy them, and 2, it'll make you second guess what's really worth it. It'll make that jar of office candy look a lot less inviting if you know that you don't want to spend your indulgence on that. You'd rather have a good indulgence.
Yeah.
And so you can still enjoy that and know that it will not prevent you from achieving your weight loss goals.
I like the way you said that, because in my day job, being a public accountant, in the office, we do have a candy jar. You walk by it when you come in the door. And when you're having a stressful work day, particularly in the middle of busy season in the spring, when you're doing the insane hours every week, it is so easy around 2 or 3 o'clock to just go up and say, I'm just going to have 1 piece of candy. But you do that every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tim and I, in order to curb our dessert eating every week, we decided Sunday night would be ice cream night. And we're not getting the off-brand ice cream. We're getting the really, really good Tillamook is what I grew up with, Tillamook ice cream. It is expensive, but you just need 2 scoops, and it is so satisfying. And all week, every time you think, oh, I just want to have that, I just want to have this, or can we have ice cream tonight? Nope. Sunday night, you look forward to that.
Uh-huh, and that keeps you going, doesn't it?
It does. It is. Yep. Brilliant strategy.
And if you cut that out, it's just not going to last long, is it?
No. No, it won't. So beyond the, yes, you got to keep your indulgences in your diet, what are some other simple tips for eating healthy?
I think a good approach would be to focus on getting in certain things rather than cutting out. So I would say working towards getting in your fruits and vegetables every day. And that's actually a challenge. So that's something to work towards and to have discipline over, but it's not not focused on cutting out or you're not focusing on the bad foods. And I think that makes a huge difference, because if you're focusing on the fruits and vegetables and getting them in, by nature you're going to be having less of the other things, but you're also getting in those vitamins and minerals. So maybe this might look like a piece of fruit at breakfast, a piece of fruit for your mid-morning snack, and then always have a vegetable at dinner, and then if you have leftovers of dinner at lunch, then that's 2 vegetables. And to be honest, a serving of vegetables is a half a cup, so if you have any more than a cup at a meal, then that's more than 1 serving. So there you have it. You're already at your 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. And if you can hit that goal 5 out of 7 days a week, you are doing fantastic, and you will probably be eating a lot less of the other things, because fruits and vegetables are filling. They're going to take up your stomach space where you would usually be snacking on other things. So that would be 1 tip. Another tip would be, I would say, avoiding hard and fast no rules, avoiding those I cannot have X, Y, or Z, because like I said before, that just makes you want it so much more, and it's going to be taking up your focus and your attention when you could be focusing on what you can get into your diet. And you're always going to have some snacks and indulgences and things, but if you don't try, you're not always going to have your fruits and vegetables in your diet. That takes work and it takes focus, and if you focus on that, I think you will have a much better quality diet overall than focusing on what you're cutting out. And it will give you a much better relationship with your food too. You won't be fearing what bad things your food is doing to you. You'll be thinking about what good things your food is doing to you.
Yes. There was a book I read earlier this year. I guess since it's going live in 2021, earlier in 2020, it was about a mom learning the French style of eating, and she had a couple little kids, and her husband was French. So it took her a huge learning curve to do that, but what she noticed was instead of feeding her toddler and her kindergarten, the refined snacks, like the goldfish or whatnot, if she fed a piece of fruit or a whole grain toast, you know, freshly baked since she was in France, with some protein or a slice of butter on top, that kept her kids much fuller and happier until dinner time than all the prepackaged stuff we could get. So feeding your kid a banana, that is also a mom tip. Feeding myself a banana in the morning does get me to lunch much better than a handful of crackers. So
yeah, and you know, just personal experience, because I'm in an office most of the time, when I'm hungry mid-morning and I pack fruit for snacks and that's my only choice, it also makes it a lot easier when you plan for it and you pack it and you don't pack the other things to tempt you. And then it holds you over to lunch and you don't have any other choice, and that's what you appreciate and that's what you eat.
Yep. You threw in another fun topic here that you wanted to address. You said, what if you want to eat healthy, but you're not ready for the kale, the quinoa, the die-hard healthy foods?
I've gotten that one a few times. And really, to be honest, kale and quinoa aren't my choice either, because I prefer other types of grains, just taste-wise. And you know, it's funny that health has that image that it has to be expensive. I don't know why, but it does. Like chia seeds and flax and goji berries and all those superfoods are all exotic and expensive, but a lot of our common foods are really healthy and I think should be considered and are considered superfoods. And that's things like, you know, rice and whole wheat pasta, whole wheat bread, bananas, oranges, apples, all the things that we are like the most common things that we have in our grocery stores are still really healthy. And honestly, the healthiest foods for you are the ones that you'll eat. So if your family is not going to be eating kale and quinoa, don't make it. Make rice. Brown rice and carrots or whatever they like, green beans. You know, it's a fruit and a vegetable just the same. It's a whole grain just the same. Now mixing them different ones is fantastic because you get different vitamins and minerals from different ones. But it does not have to be expensive and it doesn't have to be exotic by any means. So if you're not into kale and quinoa, it's all right. Today's your lucky day.
You
can eat that banana.
Banana's awesome. And also the cauliflower rice thing. I recently tried a one-week meal plan. And one of the things that they had you make, and they had you do your protein with some kind of marinated chicken. And then instead of rice with this, they had you food process ahead of cauliflower, dry it off very well, and then saute it. It was so much work. And Tim took one bite and he looked at me and said, "Please don't ever make me eat this again." And I totally agree. If we want cauliflower with our meal, just roast it, put some seasonings on it. We don't need to have it as a rice substitute.
I agree. You know, they try and make things all fancy. That's what I'm saying. It can just be simple.
So I mentioned the dreaded meal planning. So let's go on to that topic. Because I kind of have a love-hate relationship with meal planning. I don't know if you are the same way I am, but I love trying new recipes. And then I get so bogged down with all these new recipes I've bookmarked or printed off or the cookbooks that I collect. It can get overwhelming to plan meals and then make sure you're planning healthy meals and a variety of foods. So it is a whole lot of work and time. What do you say to the person that says, I just don't have time to meal plan, shop, or cook?
Well, I mean, everybody has a different schedule, but there are some strategies to go about that. You could look up a plan online. They do have some free ones that you could have everything from the grocery shopping list to the instructions to the days of when to get things out to fall and all that. That could work for you. It might not. They might not all be things that you like. So that's a risk of, you know, not everything on that meal plan you would like. It's not catered to your likes. You could do grocery pickup. That's becoming a much more easy thing to do now with COVID. But you order it online, and then you don't have to go to the grocery store and spend all that time, and you just have it delivered, or you pick it up at the store. And then one thing that I think also people overthink, and that is keep it simple. Just prepare simple things. I like to try new things too. My husband prefers, I limit it to one new thing a week in case it doesn't turn out. But keep it simple. You can have some dinners that are just a simple protein and grain and vegetable, and it sounds boring, but it doesn't have to be. You can have different sauces and seasonings on it, but it also doesn't have to be gourmet. I think our taste buds are more accustomed to eating out and the gourmet flavors of eating out, that when we have our own food that we cook at home, it sounds boring and drab to us. And sometimes that's okay to have average food, because the really good tasting food is going to be high in fat and sodium and salt, and that's why it tastes so good. It's okay to have average food and to have simple recipes. It does not have to be fancy at all, at least for the majority of the week. Now, if you want to have some nice meals, that's perfectly great too. And then something else that I haven't done myself but have heard people find very helpful is putting forth the effort at the beginning and making a month-long menu rotation. And so every 4 weeks you'd have the same menu as you did 4 weeks prior, and you just rotate and you have 4 weeks that you cycle through. And if you want to have one day that you have a new recipe, then maybe that's like every Friday you have a new recipe or something, and you can have some fun there. But a lot of people are okay with routine, and they have like Taco Tuesday and stuff. It doesn't necessarily have to be Taco Tuesday, but having just a 4 week rotation that they fall back on, then they don't have to think about it every week. They don't have to sit there coming up with a new menu every week. And then another tip is you could try and schedule your week with categories. Some people do it by type, like tonight is Mexican night. I have one Mexican night, one Italian night, one, you know, whatever flavor night. Some people do it by meat type. They might do like, this is my chicken night, this is my pork night, this is my vegetarian night. You know, there's different ways that people break down their meal plans, and it creates a template that you don't have to think as hard about. You can just sort of fill in with your recipes and have that database of recipes that you just pull from.
And database of references, recipes, that brings me back to a tip I heard someone else give, to definitely keep those family-loved recipes, the stuff that you can make without looking at a recipe. So for me, that would be spaghetti and taco salad, things that you can get to the table quickly and pull out of your back pocket without having to do a whole lot of brain work. So having maybe one meal a week that is one of those tried and true family favorites would also take some stress off.
Yes. I haven't done this either, but it is also known to be pretty helpful to just keep a running list of all the recipes that you have and like the names, so that when you are going through looking for recipes or looking for something to make, seeing it will spark your memory of you're like, oh, that does sound good. But nowadays we have paper recipes from our family, we have Pinterest recipes online, we have the ones from allrecipe.com, and we forget where they are. But having like a what's it called? A table of contents almost,
Yeah.
where you just list all your recipes and keep a running list, and it really helps to spark your memory when you're trying to think of things to make.
And then I started this year actually writing stuff in my recipe collection. So in my cookbooks, I'm writing how many stars we give it. So if it's not 4 stars or above,
Oh.
we're not cooking it again.
Very nice.
Or anything I've made from offline that we did really like, I print it off and, put the 4 or 5 stars on there. So it's not worth my time to keep if it's 3 stars or below.
And that's a good rule too. It narrows it down, so you don't have to worry about wasting your time on something you're not going to eat leftovers of, you know?
What about the person that says, I hate cooking, so my meals come from bags, cans, and boxes? Is that still nutritional?
It can be, yeah. So, frozen produce, frozen fruits and vegetables actually maintain almost all of their nutrients that fresh do. They lose a little bit depending on the fruit or vegetable, but for the most part, they retain almost all of the same nutrients. Canned also, canned takes a little bit of a hit with nutrients. When it's canned, they do lose some, however, they still retain a pretty good amount. And as long as it's a low sodium canned item, definitely a good option for convenience. For grains, well, they're always in bags and boxes. Unless you go to a bulk store and get them and you like pour them into your bag or however. But the quick cook grains, like the quick 5 minute rice and the quick cook barley and all that stuff, it is just the same nutritionally as the regular item. It's just pre-cooked and dried again so that it cooks faster the second time when you're cooking it. So that is definitely a good choice. You just have to be careful when you are in packaged items of the salt and the sugar content. But once you figure out what brands or what how to look for that no salt added or sugar added label on the can or the package, then you're pretty much good to go. That being said, even fresh fruits and vegetables, when you cook them, they lose nutrients too. So I wouldn't worry so much about frozen versus fresh. If you're going to cook it, it's still going to leave some, and that's okay because you're still getting a whole lot, and you're getting a whole lot more than if you didn't need it. So if that is what you will do, if you'll use those frozen items in the cans and the boxes, then as compared to eating out, then that's great. Go for that instead.
And we've referenced eating out several times. So the really big question, is it still possible to eat healthy while you eat out?
Yes, it is. And it doesn't have to just be salads every time you go out somewhere, because that can also be high calories too. The salads that you get at restaurants are loaded up with all sorts of stuff too. The largest culprit is the portion sizes at restaurants and even to-go food. They're just huge. So to help control that, because really the issue with gaining weight is that you're eating more calories than you're burning. So if you have a larger portion size of any given food, it's going to be more than you're burning. Now, eating too much vegetable is really hard to do calorie-wise, but my point is, it's the portion size, not necessarily the item that you're choosing. There are obviously healthy options at almost every restaurant, but the portion size is the most important. So if you want to make a rule to always order the smallest size fry, or always order the smallest whatever you're getting, that could be a good tool for you. No, going in, you're going to order the smallest size. It could be if you're dining somewhere, having a box at the beginning of the meal and boxing up half before you even begin, so that you don't feel like you have to finish everything.
Splitting
your dessert or whatever have you, and also using your indulgences when you eat out. So eating out is not a doesn't count day. It's just one of your indulgences. That's it. That's all it is. And you can choose to use it then, or you can choose to use it another time. And if it's worth it to you, whatever is in front of you, to eat it for your indulgence, then so be it.
I like that rule. And it's so easy to do. So thank you, Kelsey, for all these tips, I didn't realize that it was that easy type things. Because it is easy to eat healthy. And your input on the positive approach to eating is, I think, a very emotionally healthy thing too, because we don't have to feel guilty about food anymore. We don't have to be counting every single calorie. It's, okay, how can I sneak some more fruit and veggies into my day? How can I be intentional about doing what I know I should be doing and having fun with it? Because you don't have to be eating, as we talked earlier, cabbage steaks. If you love them, great, but bless your heart. So thank you, Kelsey. This has been great. Any last advice?
You know, I think just that the Lord has given us all things to eat. All foods have been given to us. All things have been given to us as food. So there are no bad foods. But the Bible does talk about gluttony. So it is about controlling how much. And yet at the same time, you are to enjoy your food. So I just think having a positive approach to it is really helpful. And having that negative approach that so many people nowadays have with fad diets and with struggles with weight loss and things, cutting out foods, labeling them as bad or as going to cause all these diseases to eat these foods, is just wrong. Food is for the benefit of our bodies. Eating too much is bad, and the Bible warns of that. It's not any secret that eating too much is going to cause problems. But having that label of bad foods and good foods can also cause problems, and it can cause eating disorders, and it can cause all sorts of self-hate or judging of others, even when you see them eating a food that you've called bad. So just having that positive approach, getting your five fruits and vegetables in, using your three indulgences, and enjoying the food that the Lord has given us.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.